No matter what you do here, you are defeated.
A strange smile twisted my mouth.
I win.
Snarling, Night Eyes advanced to stand at my side. Then, Will's face changed.
Regal looked at me out of his eyes. He was as unmoved by Burl's death as he would be by Will's. I sensed no grief, only anger at a lessening of his power.
Perhaps, he said with Will's voice. Perhaps then all I should care for is killing you, bastard.
At whatever the cost.
He smiled at me, the smile of a man who knows how the tumbling dice will fall before they land. I knew a moment of uncertainty and fear. I flung my walls up tighter against Will's insidious attacks.
Do you really think a one-eyed swordsman has a fighting chance against my blade and my wolf, Regal? Or do you plan to throw his life away as casually as you have the rest of the coterie?
I flung the question in a faint hope of stirring discord between them.
Why not?
Regal asked me calmly with Will's voice. Or did you think I was truly as stupid as my brother, to be content with only one coterie?
A wave of skill struck me with the force of a wall of water. I staggered back before it, then regained myself and charged at Will. I'd have to kill him quickly.
Regal had control of Will's skill. He little cared what it would do to Will, how it might scorch him if he killed me with a skill blast. I could feel him drawing up skill power into himself. Yet even as I put all my heart into killing Will, Regal's words ate at me.
Another coterie. One-eyed or not, Will was fast. His blade was a part of him as he met my first thrust and turned it. I wished, for an instant, for the familiarity of my battered shortsword. Then I threw such thoughts aside as useless and thought only of breaking past his guard. The wolf moved swiftly past me, belly low, as he sought to close on Regal from Will's blindside.
Three new coteries!
Will's voice gasped with effort as he parried my blade. I slipped away from his thrust and tried to wrap his blade. He was too fast for that.
Young, strong skill users! To carve dragons of my own!
A swiping slash whose breeze I felt.
Dragons at my beck, loyal to me. Dragons to bring down verity in blood and scales.
He spun and darted a thrust at Night Eyes. The wolf leaped wildly away. I sprang in, but his blade was already back to meet mine. He fought with incredible speed. Another use of the skill, or a skill illusion he forced on me.
Then they shall clear the red ships for me, and open the mountain passes. The mountains will be mine as well. I shall be a hero. No one will oppose me then.
His blade struck mine hard, a jolt I felt in my shoulder. His words jolted me as well. They rang with truth and determination. Skill imbued, they pounded against me with the solid force of hopelessness.
I shall master the skill road. The ancient city will be my new capital. All my skill users shall be drenched in the river's magic.
Another swipe at Night Eyes. It shaved a wisp of hair from his shoulder, and again that opening passed too swiftly for my own clumsy blade. I felt I stood shoulder deep in water, and fought a man whose blade was light as a straw.
Stupid bastard! Did you truly think I cared about one pregnant whore? One dragon a wing? The quarry itself is the true prize. The one you have left unguarded for me, the stuff from which a score, no, 100 dragons shall rise.
How had we been so stupid? How had we not seen what Regal truly sought? We had thought with our hearts of 6 duchess folk, of farmers and fishermen who needed their king's arm to defend them. But Regal? He had thought only of what the skill could win for him. I knew his next words before he flung them.
In Bingtown and Chalcid, they will bend their knees to me, and in the Out Islands they will cower at my name.
Others come, and above us. Night Eye's warning nearly killed me. For in the instant I lifted my eyes, Will sprang at me. I gave ground, all but running backward to avoid his blade. Far behind him, from the mouth of the quarry, a dozen men ran toward us, brandishing blades. They moved not in step, but with a oneness to them far more cohesive than any mere troops could have mustered. A coterie! I sensed their skill as they approached, like the storm winds that precede a squall. Will suddenly halted his advance. My wolf raced to meet them, teeth bared, snarling. Night Eye, stop! You cannot fight 12 blades wielded by one mind! Will lowered his blade, then casually sheathed it. He called to the coterie over his shoulder, "Don't bother with them! Let the archers finish them!" A glance at the towering walls of the quarry showed me this was no bluff. Gold and brown-clad soldiers were coming into position. I grasped this was what the troops were about. Not to defeat Verity, but to take and hold his quarry. Another wave of humiliation and despair washed over me. Then I lifted my blade and charged at Will, him at least. I would kill. An arrow clattered across the stone floor where I had stood. Another skittered right between Night Eye's legs. A scream rose from the walls of the quarry to the west of us. Girl on a dragon swept low over me, the fool on her back. A golden-brown archer writhing in the dragon's jaws. The man was gone suddenly. A puff of smoke or steam swept away by the wind of her passage. She banked her wings, came in low again, snatching up another archer, and sending one leaping into the quarry to avoid her. Another puff of smoke. On the floor of the quarry, all of us were frozen, gaping up. Will recovered more quickly than I did, an angry shout to his archers, ringing with skill, "Fire upon her! Bring her down!" Almost instantly, a phalanx of arrows went singing toward her. Some arced and fell before they even reached her. The rest she deflected with a single powerful beat of her wings. The arrows suddenly wobbled in the gust of her wind and fell tumbling like straws to shatter on the quarry floor. Girl on a dragon abruptly stooped and came diving directly at Will. He fled. I believe Regal abandoned him for at least as long as it took him to make that decision. He ran, and for an instant it appeared that he chased the wolf who had nearly closed the distance between him and the coterie. Save at the moment the coterie realized that Will was fleeing toward them, with a dragon shearing through the air behind them, the coterie turned on their heels and fled as well. I caught a brief flash of Night Eye's delighted triumph that 12 swordsmen would not stand to meet his charge. Then he cowered to the earth as Girl on a Dragon swept low over all of us. It was not only the harsh wind of her passage that I felt, but also a dizzying sweep of skill that, in an instant, snatched from my mind every thought I had been holding. As if the world had been plunged briefly into absolute darkness, and then handed back to me, in full brightness it was. I stumbled as I ran, and for an instant could not recall why I carried a bared sword, or who I chased. Ahead of me, Will faltered as the shadow swept him, and then the coterie staggered in their turn. Her claws snatched fruitlessly at Will as she passed. The scattered blocks of black stone were his salvation, for such was her wingspan that he could elude her in the narrowness of their maze. She shrieked her frustration, the high wild cry of a hawk thwarted. She rose and banked to make a second sweep at him. I gasped as she flew right into a singing flight of arrows. They rattled uselessly off her hide, as if the archers had targeted the black stone of the quarry itself. Only the fool cowered away from them. Girl on a Dragon changed course abruptly, to fly low over the archers and snatch another from their midst, and consume him in an instant. Again her shadow swept over me, and again a moment of my life was snatched from me. I opened my eyes to find Will gone. Then I caught a brief glimpse of him, veering as he ran, dodging between the standing blocks of stone, much as a hare breaks his trail as he flees from a hawk. I could no longer see the coterie, but suddenly Night Eyes sprang from the shadow of a stone block to race by my side. "Oh, my brother, the Scentless One hunts well," he exulted. "We were wise to take him into our pack." "Will is my kill," I declared to him. "Your kill is my kill," he pointed out quite seriously. "This is pack, and he shall be no one's kill unless we spread out to find him." He was right. Ahead of us, I heard shouts, and occasionally saw a gold and brown flash as a man dashed across a wide space between the blocks of stone. But most of them had rapidly understood that the way to remain sheltered from the dragon was to cling closely to the edges of the immense stone blocks. "They are running for the pillar. If we get to where we can see it, we can wait for him there." It seemed logical. To flee through the pillar would be the only way they could hope to escape the dragon for any length of time. I still heard the occasional clatter as arrows rained down in the dragon's wake, but a good portion of the archers who had ringed the quarry walls had retreated to the shelter of the surrounding forest. Night Eyes and I abandoned all efforts to find Will and simply went directly to the pillar. I had to admire the discipline of some of Regal's archers. Despite all else, if the wolf and I broke cover for more than a few strides, we would hear a cry of, "There they are!" And moments later, arrows would be hailing down where we had been. We reached the pillar in time to see two of Regal's new coterie dash across the open, hands reaching, to plunge into the dark pillar itself the moment they touched it. The rune for the stone garden was the one they chose, but perhaps it was only because it was the side of the pillar closest to cover. We did not move from the angle of a great block that sheltered us from arrows.
"Did he go through already?"
"Perhaps. Wait." Several eternities passed. I became certain that Will had eluded us. Above us, Girl on a Dragon swept her shadow over the quarry walls. The cry of her victims were less frequent. The archers were using the cover of trees to hide themselves. Briefly, I watched her rise, circling high above the quarry. She hung, shining green high against the blue sky, rocking on her wings. I wondered what it was like for the fool to ride so. At least he had the girl part of the dragon to cling to. Abruptly, Girl on a Dragon tipped, side-slipped in the sky, and then folded her wings, plummeting down toward us. At the moment she did, Will broke cover and ran for the pillar. Night Eyes and I leaped after him. We were agonizingly close behind him. I ran fast, but the wolf ran faster, and Will fled the fastest of all. At the moment when his reaching fingertips brushed the pillar, the wolf made a final spring. His front paws slammed into Will's back, sending him head first toward the pillar. As I saw him melting into it, I cried out a warning to Night Eyes and gripped his fur to drag him back. He seized one of Will's calves as Will was snatched away from us. At the moment that his jaws closed on Will's flesh, the dragon's shadow swept over us. I lost my grip on the world and fell into blackness. Tales abound of heroes who have wrestled dark foes in the underworld. There are a few told of those who have willingly entered the dark unknown to rescue friends or lovers. In a timeless moment, I was offered quite clearly a choice. I could seize Will and choke the life out of him, or clasp Night Eyes to me and hold him together against all the forces that tore at his wolf's mind and being. It was really no decision at all. We emerged into cool shade and trampled grass. One moment, there was only darkness and passage. In the next, we breathed and felt again. And feared. I scrabbled to my feet, amazed to find I still gripped Verity's sword. Nighteyes heaved himself up, staggered 2 steps, and fell over.
Sick. Poisoned. The whole world sways.
Lie still and breathe. I stood before him and lifted my eyes to glare around us. My gaze was returned, not only by Will, but by most of Regal's new coterie. Most of them were still breathing hard, and one gave a shout of alarm at the sight of us. When Will shouted, a number of Pharaoh guards came running as well. They fanned out to surround us.
We must go back through the pillar. It's our only chance.
I cannot. You go.
Nighteye's head drooped toward his paws, and his eyes closed.
That is not Pack,
I told him sternly. I lifted Verity's sword.
So this was how I was going to die.
I was glad the fool had not told me. I probably would have killed myself first.
Just kill him!
Will ordered them. We've wasted enough time on him. Kill him and the wolf. And then find me an archer who can shoot a man off a dragon's back for me. Regal turned Will's back to me and strode away, still issuing orders.
You, third coterie! You told me a finished dragon could not be weakened and made to serve. Well, I have just seen an unskilled fool do that very thing. You will find out how it was done. You will begin now. Let the bastard test his skill against swords.
I lifted my sword, and Nighteyes pulled himself to his feet. His queasiness lapped against my fear as the circle of soldiers closed around us.
Well, if I must die now, there was no more to fear. Perhaps I would try my skill against their swords. I discarded my walls, flinging them aside disdainfully.
The skill was a river that raged all around me, a river that in this place was always in flood. As easily as drawing a breath it was to fill myself with it. A second breath banished my body's weariness and pains. I reached out with strength to my wolf. Beside me, Nighteyes gave himself a shake. The rising of his hackles and the baring of his teeth made him twice as large. My eyes circled the swords that surrounded us. Then we no longer waited, but sprang to meet them. As swords lifted to meet mine, Nighteyes raced forward and under them, then spun to slash a man's leg from behind. Nighteyes became a creature of speed, teeth, and fur. He did not try to bite and hold. Instead, he used his weight to knock men off balance, sending them stumbling into one another, hamstringing them when he could, slashing with his teeth rather than biting. For me, the challenge became not to strike at him as he dashed hither and yon. He never tried to challenge their swords. The moment a man turned to him and advanced, he fled, to shoulder past the legs of those who sought to confront me. As for me, I wielded Verity's sword with a grace and skill I had never before known with such a weapon. Hod's lessons and Hod's work finally came together for me, and if such a thing were possible, I would say that the spirit of the Swordmaster was in the weapon, and that she sang to me as I wielded it. I could not break out of the circle they pinned me in, but neither could they get past my guard to do more than minor damage. In that first flurry of battle, we fought well and did well, but the odds were impossible. I could force men back from my sword and step toward them, but in the next moment, I must turn to fight those men who had closed behind me. I could move the circle of battle, but not escape it. Still, I blessed the greater reach of Verity's sword that kept me alive. Other men were coming at a run to the din and shouts of fighting. Those who came drove a wedge between Nighteyes and me, forcing him ever farther away.
"Get clear of them all and run! Run! Live, my brother!"
For answer, he raced away from them all, then suddenly came looping back, charging right through their midst. Regal's men hacked at each other in a futile effort to stop him. They were not used to an opponent less than half the height of a man, and with twice the speed of one. Most aimed chopping blows at him that did no more than cleave the earth in his wake. In an instant, he was past them, and had vanished once more into the lush forest. Men glared about wildly, wondering where next he would come from. But even at the hottest of the fight, I knew the hopelessness of what we did. Regal would win. Even were I to kill every man here, Will included, Regal would win. Had already won, for all that matter. And had I not known he always would? Had not I known from the very beginning that Regal was destined to rule? I took a sudden step backward, took off a man's arm at the elbow, and used the momentum of that blow to call the sword's blade back in an arc that took the tip across the face of another man. As the two fell, tangling together, there was a tiny opening in the circle. I took a step into the brief space, focused my skill, and seized Will's insidious grip upon my mind. I felt a blade lick against my left shoulder as I did so. I spun to engage my attacker's sword, then bade my body to think for itself for a moment, and made good my grip on Will. Wound through Will's consciousness, I found Regal, twisted into him like a drill worm in a deer's heart. Will could not have broken free of him, even if he had been able to think of doing it. And it seemed to me that there was not enough left of Will to even form a thought for himself. Will was a body, a vessel of meat and blood, holding skill for Regal to wield. Bereft of the coterie that had strengthened him, he was not all that formidable a weapon any more. Less valuable. One that might be used and cast aside with little remorse. I could not fight in both directions at once. I kept my grip on Will's mind, forced his thoughts away from mine, and strove to direct my body as well. In the next instant, I took two cuts, one to my left calf and one to my right forearm. I knew I could not sustain it. I could not see Night Eyes. He at least had a chance. Get clear of this, Night Eyes. It's all over. It but begins. He contradicted me. He surged through me like a flash of heat. From some other part of the camp I heard a cry in Will's voice. Somewhere, a Witwolf ravaged his body. I could sense Regal trying to unwind his mind from Will's. I clamped my hold tighter on them both. Stay and face it, Regal. The point of a sword found my hip. I jerked away from it and stumbled against stone, leaving a bloody handprint as I pushed myself upright again. It was reeled as dragon. I had dragged the battle that far. I put my back to him, thankfully, and turned to face my attackers. Night Eyes and Will still fought. Plainly, Regal had learned something from his tortures of witted ones. He was not as vulnerable to the wolf as he once would have been. He could not hurt the wolf with skill, but he could wrap him with layer upon layer of fear. Night Eye's heart was suddenly thundering in my ears. I opened myself once more to the skill, filled myself, and did that I had never attempted before. I fed skill strength as wit to Night Eyes. For you, my brother. I felt Night Eyes repel at Will, breaking free of him for an instant. Will used that instant to flee us both. I longed to give chase, but behind me I felt an answering stir of the wit in Realda's dragon in a brief stench. My bloody handprint on his hide smoked away. He stirred. He was awakening. And he was hungry. There was a sudden crackling of branches and a storm of torn leaves as a great wind broke into the still heart of the forest. Girl on a dragon landed abruptly in the small cleared space by the pillar. Her lashing tail cleared the area around her of men. "Over there!" the fool shouted to her. and in a moment her head snaked out to seize one of my attackers in her fearsome jaws. He vanished in a puff of smoke, and I felt her skill swell with the life she had consumed. Behind me, a wedge-shaped reptilian head lifted suddenly. For a moment, all was blackness as that shadow passed over me. Then the head darted out, swifter than a striking snake, to seize the man nearest us. He vanished, the steam of what he had been stinking briefly past me. The roar the dragon gave near deafened me.
My brother?
I live, Nighteyes.
As do I, brother.
As do I, brother.
And I hunger.
The wit voice of a very large carnivore. Old blood, indeed. The strength of it shivered through my bones. Nighteyes had the wit to reply.
Feed then, large brother. Make our kill yours and welcome. That is pack.
Realda's dragon did not have to be invited twice. Whoever Realda had been, he had put a healthy appetite into his dragon. Great clawed feet tore clear of the moss and earth. A tail lashed free, felling a small tree as it passed. I was barely able to scramble out of his path as he lunged to engulf another Pharaman in his jaws.
Blood and wit, that is what it takes. Blood and wit. We can wake the dragons.
Blood and wit? At the moment, we are drenched in both.
He understood me instantly. In the midst of slaughter, Nighteyes and I played an insane child's game. It was almost a contest to see who could wake the most. A contest the wolf easily won. He would dart to a dragon, shake blood from his coat onto it, then bid it,
"Wake, brother, and feed. We have brought you meat."
And as each great body smoked with wolf blood and then stirred, he would remind it,
"We are pack."
I found King Wisdom. He was the antlered dragon, and he roused from his sleep, shouting,
"Bark for buck keep! Ida and El, but I am hungry!"
"There are red ships aplenty off the coast of Buck, my lord. They but await your jaws,"
I told him. For all his words, there was little human left about him. Stone and souls had merged to become dragons, in truth. We understood one another as carnivores do. They had hunted as a pack before, and that they recalled well. Most of the other dragons had nothing at all human about them. They had been shaped by elderlings, not men, and we understood little more of one another than that we were brothers and had brought them meat. Those who had been formed by Coterie had dim recollections of Buck and Farseer kings. It was not those memories that bound them to me, but my promise of food. I counted it as the greatest blessing that I could imprint that much on these strange minds. There came a time when I could find no more dragons in the underbrush. Behind me, where regal soldiers had camped, I heard the cries of hunted men and the roaring of dragons as they competed for not meat, but life. Trees gave way before their charges, and their lashing tails sliced brush as a scythe cuts grain stalks. I had paused to breathe, one hand braced on my knee, the other still gripping Verity's sword. Breath came harsh and dry to me. Pain was beginning to break through the skill I had imposed on my body. Blood was dripping from my fingers. Lacking a dragon to give it to, I wiped my hand down my jerkin.
"Fitz!"
I turned as the fool ran up to me. He caught me in his arms, hugged me hard.
"You still live, thank all gods everywhere. She flies like the wind itself, and she knew where to find you. Somehow she felt this battle from all that distance."
He paused for breath and added,
"Her hunger is insatiable, Fitz. You must come with me. Now they are running out of prey. You must mount her with me and lead them to where they can feed, or I do not know what they will do."
Night Eyes joined us.
This is a large and hungry pack. It will take much game to fill them.
Shall we go with them to their hunting?
Night Eyes hesitated. On the back of one? Through the air?
That is how they hunt.
This is not the wolf's way. But if you must leave me, I will understand.
I do not leave you, my brother. I do not leave you. I think the fool sensed something of what passed between us, for he was already shaking his head before I spoke.
You must lead them. On girl on a dragon, take them back to Buck and Verity. They will hearken to you, for you are pack with us now. It is something they understand.
Fitz, I cannot. I was not made for this slaughter. This taking of life is not why I came. I have never seen this, not in any dream, nor read of it in any scroll. I fear I may lead time awry.
No, this is right, I feel it. I am the catalyst, and I came to change all things. Prophets become warriors. Dragons hunt as wolves. I hardly knew my own voice as I spoke. I had no idea where such words came from. I met the fool's unbelieving eyes.
It is as it must be. Go.
Fitz, I...
Girl on a dragon came lumbering toward us. On the ground, her airy grace deserted her. Instead, she walked with power, as a hulking bear or a great horned bull does. The green of her scales shone like dark emeralds in sunlight. The girl on her back was a breathtaking beauty for all her empty expression. The dragon head lifted, and she opened her mouth and darted her tongue out to taste the air.
More.
Hurry, I bid him. He embraced me almost convulsively and shocked me when he kissed my mouth. He spun and ran toward girl on a dragon. The girl part of her leaned down to offer him a hand as she drew him up to sit behind her. The expression on her face never changed. Just another part of the dragon.
To me!
He cried to the dragons that were already gathering around us. The last look he gave me was a mocking smile.
Follow the scentless one,
Night Eyes commanded them, before I could think.
He is a mighty hunter, and will lead you to much meat. Hearken to him, for he is pack with us.
Girl on a dragon leaped up, her wings open, and with powerful beats they carried her steadily upward. The fool clung behind her. He lifted a hand in farewell, then quickly put it back to clutch at her waist. It was my last sight of him. The others followed, giving cry in a way that reminded me of hounds on a trail, save they sounded more like the shrilling of raptor birds. Even the winged boar rose, ungainly as was his leap into the air. The beating of their wings was such that I covered my ears, and Night Eyes shrank belly down to the earth beside me. Trees swayed in the great passage of dragons, and dropped branches, both dead and green. For a time, the sky was filled with jeweled creatures, green and red and blue and yellow. Whenever the shadow of one passed over me, I knew a blackness. But my eyes were opened and watching as Rielda's dragon lifted, last of them all, to follow that great pack into the sky. In a short time, the canopy of trees hid them from my view. Gradually, their cries faded.
Your dragons are coming, Verity.
I told the man I had once known. The elderlings have risen to Buck's defense.
Just as you said they would.
40. Regal. The catalyst comes to change all things. In the wake of the dragon's departure, there was a great silence, broken only by the whispers of leaves as a few sifted down to the forest floor. Not a frog croaked.
Not a bird sang. The dragons had broken the roof of the forest in their departure. Great shafts of sunlight shone down on soil that had been shaded since before I was born. Trees had been uprooted or snapped off, and great troughs had been gouged in the forest floor by the passage of their immense bodies. Scaly shoulders had gashed the bark from ancient trees, bearing the secret white cambium beneath. The slashed earth and trees and trampled grasses gave up their rich odors to the warm afternoon. I stood in the midst of destruction, Night Eyes at my side, and looked about slowly. Then we went to look for water. Our passage took us through the camp. It was an odd battle scene. There were scattered weapons and occasional helms, trampled tents and scattered gear, but little more than that. The only bodies that remained were those of soldiers that Night Eyes and I had killed. The dragons had no interest in dead meat. They fed on the life that fled such tissue. I found the stream I had recalled, and threw myself flat by it, to drink as if my thirst had no bottom. Night Eyes lapped beside me, then flung himself to the cool grass by the stream. He began a slow, careful licking of a slash on his forepaw. It had parted his hide, and he pressed his tongue into that gap, cleaning it carefully. It would heal as a fusing of dark, hairless skin. Just another scar. He dismissed my thought. What shall we do now? I was carefully peeling my shirt off. Drying blood made it cling to my injuries. I set my teeth and jerked it loose. I leaned over the stream to splash cold water up onto the sword cuts I had taken. Just a few more scars, I told myself glumly. And what shall we do now? Sleep. The only thing that would sound better than that would be eating. I've no stomach to kill anything else right now, I told him. That's the trouble with killing humans. All that work and nothing to eat for it. I heaved myself wearily to my feet. Let's go look through their tents. I need something to use for bandaging, and they must have some food stores. I left my old shirt where it had fallen. I'd find another. Right now, even its weight seemed too much to bother carrying. I'd probably have dropped Verity's sword, except that I had already sheathed it. Drawing it again would have been too much trouble. I was suddenly that tired. The tents had been trampled flat in the dragon's hunting. One had collapsed into a cook fire and was smoldering. I dragged it away and trampled it out. Then the wolf and I began systematically to salvage what we would need. His nose quickly found their food supplies. There was some dried meat, but it was mostly travel bread. We were too famished to be fussy. I had gone so long without bread of any kind that it tasted almost good. I even found a skin of wine, but one taste persuaded me to use it to wash my injuries instead. I bound my wounds in brown cambric from a farrowman's shirt. I still had some wine left. I tasted it again. Then I tried to persuade Night Eyes to let me wash his injuries, but he refused, saying they already hurt enough. I was starting to stiffen, but I forced myself to my feet. I found a soldier's pack and discarded from it all things useless to me. I rolled up two blankets and tied them snugly, and found a golden brown cloak to wear against chilly evenings. I rummaged up more bread and put it in the pack. What are you doing? Night Eyes was drowsing, nearly asleep. I don't want to sleep here tonight. So I gather what I will need for our journey. Journey? Where are we going? I stood still for a moment. Back to Molly and Buck? No. Never again. Jumpy? Why? Why travel that long and wearisome black road again? I could think of no good reasons.
Well, I still don't want to sleep here tonight. I'd like to be well away from that pillar before I rest again.
Very well.
Then, what was that? We froze as we stood, every sense prickling. Let's go and find out, I suggested quietly. Afternoon was venturing into evening, and the shadows under the trees were deepening. What we had heard was a sound that didn't belong amongst the creakings of the frogs and insects and the fading calls of the daybirds. It had come from the place of battle. We found Will on his belly, dragging himself toward the pillar. Rather, he had been dragging himself. When we found him, he was still. One of his legs was gone, severed away, jaggedly. Bone thrust out of the torn flesh. He had bound a sleeve about the stump, but not tightly enough. Blood still leaked from it. Night Eyes bared his teeth as I stooped to touch him. He lived, but barely. No doubt he had hoped to reach the pillar and slip through to find others of Regal's men to aid him. Regal must have known he still lived, but he had sent no one back for him. He had not even the decency to be loyal to a man who had served him that long. I loosed the sleeve and bound it more tightly. Then I lifted his head and dribbled a little water into his mouth.
"Why do you bother?"
Night Eyes asked.
"We hate him, and he's nearly dead. Let him die."
"Not yet, not just yet. Will. Can you hear me, Will?" The only sign was a change in his breathing. I gave him a bit more water. He breathed some in, gasped, then swallowed the next mouthful. He took a deeper breath and sighed it out. I opened myself and gathered skill.
"My brother, leave this. Let him die. This is the doing of carrion birds, to peck at a dying thing. It's not Will I'm after, Night Eyes. This may be the last chance I'll ever get at Regal. I'm going to take it."
He made no reply, but lay down on the ground beside me. He watched as I drew more skill into myself. How much, I wondered, did it take to kill? Could I summon enough? Will was so weak I almost felt shamed. I thrust past his defenses as easily as one would push aside a sick child's hands. It was not just the loss of blood and the pain. It was Burl's death, following so close on Carid's, and it was the shock of Regal's abandonment. His own loyalty to Regal had been skill imprinted on him. He could not grasp that Regal had felt no real bond with him. It shamed him that I could see that in him.
"Kill me now, bastard. Go ahead. I'm dying anyway."
"It's not about you, Will. It was never about you." I saw that clearly now. I groped inside him as if I were probing a wound for an arrowhead. He struggled feebly against my invasion, but I ignored that. I shuffled through his memories, but found little that was useful. Yes, Regal had coteries, but they were young and green, little more than groups of men with potential for the skill. Even the ones I had seen at the quarry were uncertain. Regal had wanted him to make large coteries so they could pool more power. Regal did not understand that closeness could not be forced, nor shared by that many. He had lost 4 young skill users on the skill road. They were not dead, but vacant-eyed and vague. Another 2 had come through the pillars with him, but had lost all ability to skill afterward. Coteries were not so easily made. I went deeper, and Will threatened to die on me, but I linked with him and forced strength into him. "You won't die, not yet," I told him fiercely, and there, deep within him, my probing finally found what I sought. A skill link to Regal. It was tenuous and faint. Regal had abandoned him, done all he could to leave Will behind. But it was as I had suspected. They had been linked too strongly for too long for the bond to be easily dissolved. I gathered my skill, centered myself, and sealed myself.
I poised myself, and then I leaped. As when a sudden rain gathers and fills a stream bed that has been dry all summer, so I flowed through that skill link between Will and Regal. At the last possible moment I held myself back. I seeped into Regal's mind like slow poison, listening with his ears, seeing with his eyes. I knew him. He slept. No, he almost slept. His lungs thick with smoke, his mouth numb from brandy. I drifted into his dreams. The bed was soft beneath him, the coverlets warm over him. This last falling fit had been a bad one, a very bad one. It was disgusting to fall and twitch like the bastard fits. Not proper for this to happen to a king. Stupid healers. They could not even say what had brought these fits on. What would people think of him? The tailor and his apprentice had seen. Now he would have to kill them. No one must know. They would laugh at him. The healer had said he was better last week. Well, he would find a new healer and hang the old healer tomorrow. No, he would give him to the forged ones in the king's circle. They were very hungry now. And then let the big cats out with the forged ones. And the bull, the big white one with the sweeping horns and the hump. He tried to smile and tell himself it would be amusing, to tell himself that tomorrow would bring him pleasure. The room was thick with the cloying odor of smoke, but even it could scarcely soothe him. All had been going well, so very, very well. And then the bastard had ruined it all. He had killed Burl, and wakened the dragons, and sent them to Verity. 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 It was always Verity. Ever since he'd been born, Verity and Chivalry got tall horses, while he was kept to a pony. Verity and Chivalry got real swords, but he must practice with wood. Verity and Chivalry always together, always older, always bigger, always thinking they were better, even though he came of finer blood than they, and by right should have inherited the throne. His mother had warned him of their jealousy of him. His mother had bade him always be careful. And more than careful. They would kill him if they could. They would. They would. Mother had done her best. She had seen them sent away as much as she could, but even sent away they might come back. No. There was only one way to be safe, only one way. Well, he would win tomorrow. He had coteries, did he not? Coteries of fine, strong young men. Coteries to make dragons for him, and him alone. The coteries were bound to him, and the dragons would be bound to him. And he would make more coteries, and more dragons, and more, until he had far more than Verity. Except Will had been teaching the coteries for him, and now Will was useless, broken like a toy. The dragon bit his leg off when he flung him in the air, and Will had landed in a tree like a kite with no wind. It was disgusting, a man with one leg. He couldn't stand broken things. His blind eye had been bad enough, but to lose a leg, too? What would men think of a king who kept a crippled servant? His mother had never trusted cripples. They are jealous, she had warned him, always jealous, and they will turn on you. But Will he had needed for the coteries. Stupid Will. It was all Will's fault. But Will was the one who knew how to wake skill in people and form them into coteries. So maybe he should send someone back for Will. If Will still lived. Will? Regal skilled tentatively toward us. Not exactly. I closed my skill around him. It was ridiculously easy, like picking up a sleeping hen from its perch. Let me go! Let me go! I felt him reaching for his other coteries. I slapped them away from him, closed him off from their skilling. He had no strength. He had never had any real skill strength. It had all been the coterie's power that he had puppeteered. It shocked me. All the fear I had borne inside me over a year's time now. Of what? Of a whining, spoiled child who schemed to take his older brother's toys. The crown and the throne were no more to him than their horses and swords had been. He had no concept of governing a kingdom, only of wearing a crown and doing what he wished. First his mother, and then Galen had done his scheming for him. He had learned from them only a sly cunning as to how to get his way. If Galen had not bound the coterie to him, he would never have wielded any true power. Stripped of his coterie, I saw him as he was, a cosseted child with a penchant for cruelty that had never been denied.
"This is what we have feared and fled? This?
Night Eyes, what do you here?
Your kill is my kill, my brother. I would see what meat we have come so far to take."
Regal squirmed and thrashed, literally sickened by the wit-touch of the wolf against his mind. It was unclean and disgusting, a dirty, doggy thing, nasty and smelly, as bad as that rat creature that scuttled in his rooms at night and could not be caught.
Night Eyes leaned closer, pressed the wit against him as if he could smell him all that way away. Regal retched and shuddered.
"Enough," I told Night Eyes, and the wolf relented.
"If you are going to kill him, do it soon,"
Night Eyes advised.
"The other one weakens and will die if you do not hurry."
He was right. Will's breath had gone shallow and rapid. I gripped Regal firmly, then fed more strength into Will. He tried not to take it, but his self-mastery was not that strong. Given a chance, the body will always choose to live. And so his lungs steadied and his heart beat more strongly. Once more I drew skill into myself. I centered myself in it, and honed its purpose. I turned my attention back to Regal.
"If you kill me, you will burn yourself. You will lose your own skill if you kill me with it."
I had thought of that. I had never much enjoyed being skilled. I had rather far be witted than skilled. It would be no loss. I forced myself to recall Galen. I called to mind the fanatical coterie he had created for Regal. It gave shape to my purpose, as I had longed to do for so long. I loosed my skill upon him. Afterward, there was little left of Will, but I sat by him and gave him water when he asked for it. I even covered him when he complained faintly of cold. It puzzled the wolf, my death watch. A knife across his throat would have been so much better for both of us, kinder, perhaps. But I decided I was no longer an assassin. So I waited for his last breath. And when he sighed it out, I stood up and walked away. It is a long way from the mountain kingdom to the coast of Buck. Even as the dragon flies, tirelessly and swift, it is a long, long way. For a few days, Night Eyes and I knew peace. We traveled far from the empty stone garden, far from the Black Skill Road. We were both too stiff to hunt well, but we had found a good trout stream and we followed it. The days were almost too warm, the nights clear and kind. We fished. We ate. We slept. I thought only of things that did not hurt, not of Molly and Burridge's embrace, but of Nettle, sheltered by his good right arm. He would be a good father to her. He had had practice. I even found it in me to hope that she might have younger brothers and sisters in years to come. I thought of peace returning to the mountain kingdom, of red ships driven from the coast of the six duchies. I healed. Not completely. A scar is never the same as good flesh. But it stops the bleeding. I was there on the summer afternoon when Verity as Dragon appeared in the skies over Buckkeep. With him, I saw the shining black towers and turrets of Buckkeep Castle far below us. Beyond the castle, where Buckkeep Town had been, were the blackened shells of buildings and warehouses. Forged ones ambled through the streets, pushed aside by swaggering raiders. Masts with tatters of canvas dangling from them thrust up through the calm waters. A dozen red ships rocked peacefully in the harbour. I felt the heart of Verity as dragon swell with anger. I swear I heard Ketrikin's cry of anguish at the sight. Then the great turquoise and silver dragon was alighting in the center grounds of Buckkeep Castle. He ignored the flight of arrows that rose to meet him. Ignored, too, the cries of the soldiers who cowered before him, senseless, as his shadow spread over them and his great wings beat, to lower his bulk to the ground. It was a wonder he did not crush them. Even as he was alighting, Ketrikin was trying to stand up upon his shoulders, crying to the guard to lower their pikes and stand away. On the ground, he dipped his shoulder to let a disheveled Queen Ketrikin dismount. Starling Birdsong slid down behind her and distinguished herself by bowing to the line of pikes that were pointed at them. I saw not a few faces I recognized, and shared Verity's pain at how privation had transformed them. Then Patience came forth, pike gripped tightly, helm askew upon her bundled hair. She pushed through the awe-stricken guards, her hazel eyes flinty in a pinched face. At the sight of the dragon, she halted. Her gaze went from the queen to the dragon's dark eyes. She took a breath, caught it, then breathed the word, "Elderling." Then she threw both helm and pike into the air with a whoop and rushed forward to embrace Ketrikin, crying, "An elderling! I knew it! I knew it! I knew they would come back!" She spun on her heel, issuing a flurry of orders that included everything from a hot bath for the queen to readying a charge from the gates of Buckkeep Castle. But what I will always hold in my heart is the moment when she turned back to stamp her foot at Verity as dragon and tell him to hurry up and get those damned ships out of her harbor. The Lady Patience of Buckkeep had become used to being obeyed swiftly. Verity rose and went to the battle as he always had. Alone. Finally he had his wish to confront his enemies not with the skill, but in the flesh. On his very first pass, a slash of his tail shattered two of their ships. He intended that none should escape him. It was but hours later that the fool and girl on a dragon, and their followers, arrived to join him. But by then, not a red ship remained in Buck Harbor. They joined him in his hunting through the steep streets of what had been Buckkeep Town. It was not yet evening when the streets were empty of raiders. Those who had sheltered in the castle poured back into the town to weep at the wreckage, it was true, but also to come near and wonder at the elderlings who had returned to save them. Despite the number of dragons who came, Verity was the dragon that the folk of Buck would remember clearest. Not that folk remember anything too clearly when dragons are flying overhead, casting their shadows below. Still, he is the dragon one sees on all the tapestries of the cleansing of Buck. It was a summer of dragons for the coastal duchies. I saw it all, or as much as would fit into my sleeping hours. Even awake I was aware of it, like thunder more felt than heard from the distance. I knew when Verity led the dragons northward to purge all Buck and Bairns, and even the near islands of red ships and raiders. I saw the scouring of Ripple Keep, and the return of Faith, Duchess of Bairns, to her proper keep. Girl on a Dragon and the Fool flew south along the coast of Ripon and Shokes, rooting raiders out from their strongholds on the islands as well. How Verity conveyed to them that they must feed only on the raiders I do not know. But that line was held. The folk of the six duchies feared them not. Children ran out from huts and cottages to point overhead at the jeweled passing of the creatures. When the dragons slept, temporarily satiated, on the beaches and in the pastures, the people came out to walk among them fearlessly, to touch with their own hands these jeweled, glittering creatures. And everywhere the raiders had established strongholds, the dragons fed well. The summer died slowly, and autumn came to shorten the days and promise storms to come. As the wolf and I gave thought to shelter for the winter, I had dreams of dragons flying over shores I had never seen before. Water churned cold against those harsh shores, and ice encroached on the edges of their narrow bays. The Out Islands, I surmised. Verity had always longed to bring the war to their shores, and did so with a vengeance, and that, too, was as it had been in King Wisdom's time. It was winter, and snows had come to the higher reaches of the mountains, but not to the valleys where the hot springs steamed in the chill air when the dragons last passed over my head. I came to the door of my hut to watch them pass, flying in great formations like migrating geese. Night Eyes turned his head to their strange calls and sent up a howl of his own in answer. As they swept over me, the world blinked around me, and I lost all but the vaguest memory of it. I could not tell you if Verity led their flight, or even if Girl on a Dragon was among them. I only knew that peace had been restored to the six duchies, and that no red ships would venture near our shores again. I hoped they would all sleep well in the stone garden, as they had before. I went back into the hut to turn the rabbit on the cooking spit. I looked forward to a long, quiet winter. So the promising aid of the Elderlings was brought to the six duchies. They came, just as they had in King Wisdom's time, and drove the red ships from the shores of the six duchies. Two great-sailed white ships were sank as well in that great cleansing, and just as in King Wisdom's time, their outstretched shadows on the folk below stole moments of life and memory as they passed. All the myriad shapes and colors of the dragons made their way into the scrolls and tapestries of that time, just as they had before. And folk filled in what they could not remember of the battles, when dragons filled the sky overhead with guesses and fancies. Minstrels made songs of it. All the songs say that Verity came home himself upon the turquoise dragon and rode the beast into the battle against the red ships. And the best songs say that when the fighting was over, Verity was carried off by the Elderlings to feast with them in great honor, and then sleep beside them in their magic castle until such time as Buck shall need to call on him again. So the truth became, as Starling had told me, something bigger than the facts. It was, after all, a time for heroes and all sorts of marvelous things to occur. As when Regal himself came riding, at the head of a column of 6,000 Faramen, to bring aid and supplies not just to Buck, but to all the coastal duchies. The news of his return had preceded him, as had the barges of livestock, grain, and treasures from Tradeford Hall itself that came in a steady stream down the Buck River. All spoke in wonder of how the prince had started up from a dream, and run half-dressed through the halls of Tradeford, miraculously foretelling the return of King Verity to Buck Keep, and the summoning of the Elderlings to save the six duchies. Birds were sent, withdrawing all troops from the mountains, and offering his most humble apologies and generous monetary reparation to King Eod. He summoned his nobles, to foretell to them that Queen Ketriken would bear Verity's child, and that he, Regal, wished to be first to pledge fealty to the next Farseer monarch. In honor of the day, he had ordered all gallows pulled down and burned, all prisoners pardoned and freed, and the King's Circle was to be renamed the Queen's Garden and planted with trees and flowers from all six of the duchies as a symbol of new unity. When later that day the red ships attacked the outskirts of Tradeford, Regal himself called for his horse and armor and rode to lead the defense of his folk. Side by side he fought, next to merchants and longshoremen, nobles and beggars. He gained in that battle the love of the common folk of Tradeford. When he announced his allegiance must always be to the child Queen Ketriken carried, they joined their vows to his. When he reached Buck Keep, it is said he remained on his knees and robed only in sackcloth at the gate of Buck Keep Castle for some days, until the Queen herself deigned to come forth and accept his most abject apologies, forever doubting her honour. Into her hands he returned both the crown of the 6 duchies and the simpler band of the king-in-waiting. He no longer wished, he told her, to hold any higher title than uncle to his monarch. The queen's paleness and silence at his words were put down to the uneasy stomach her pregnancy gave her. To Lord Chade, the queen's adviser, he returned all the scrolls and books of Skillmaster Solicity, with the plea that he guard them well, for there was much in them that could be turned to evil in the wrong hands. He had lands and a title he wished to confer on the fool as soon as he returned from his warrioring to Buckkeep. And to his dear, dear sister-in-law, Lady Patience, he returned the rubies that chivalry had given her, for they could never grace any neck as finely as they did her own. I had considered having him erect a statue in my memory, but had decided that would be going too far. The fanatical loyalty I had imprinted on him would be my best memorial. While Regal lived, Queen Ketriken and her child would have no more loyal subject. Ultimately, of course, that was not long. All have heard of the tragic and bizarre death of Prince Regal. The rabid creature that savaged him in his bed one night left bloody tracks, not just on his bedclothes, but all about the bedchamber, as if it had exulted in its deed. Gossip had it that it was an extremely large river rat that had somehow journeyed with him all the way from Tradeford. It was most disturbing to all the folk in the keep. The queen had the rat dogs brought in to scour every chamber, but to no avail. The beast was never captured or killed. The rumors of sightings of the immense rat were rampant among the keep servants. Some say that that was why, for months afterward, Lord Chade was seldom seen without his pet ferret. 41. The Scribe. If the truth be known, forging was not an invention of the Red Ships. We had taught it well to them, back in the days of King Wisdom. The elderlings that took our revenge on the Out Islands soared many times over that country of islands. Many Out-Islanders were devoured outright, but many others were overflown by dragons so often that they were stripped of their memories and feelings. They became callous strangers to their own kin. That was the grievance that had rankled so amongst that long-memoried folk. When the Red Ship sailed, it was not to claim 6 duchies' territory or wealth. It was for revenge. To do to us, as so long ago we had done to them, in the days of their great-great-grandmothers. What one folk know, another may discover. They had scholars and wise folk of their own, despite 6 duchies' disdain of them as barbarians. So it was that mention of dragons were studied by them in every ancient scroll they could find. While it would be difficult to find absolute proof, it seems to me that some copies of scrolls collected by the Skillmasters of Buck might actually have been sold, in the days before the Red Ships menaced our coasts, to Out-Islander traders who paid well for such things. And when the slow movement of glaciers bared, on their own shores, a dragon carved of black stone and outcroppings of more of that black stone, their wise men combined their knowledge with the insatiable lust for vengeance of one Keeble Rawlbred. They resolved to create dragons of their own, and visit upon the 6 duchies the same savage destruction we had once served upon them. Only one white ship was driven ashore by the elderlings when they cleansed Buck. The dragons devoured all her crew, down to the last man. In her hold were found only great blocks of shining black stone. Locked within them, I believe, were the stolen lives and feelings of the folk of the 6 duchies who had been forged. Their studies had led the Out-Islander scholars to believe that stone sufficiently imbued with life force could be fashioned into dragons to serve the Out-Islanders. It is chilling to think how close they came to discovering the complete truth of creating a dragon. Circles and circles, as the fool once told me. The Out-Islanders raided our shore, so King Wisdom brought the elderlings to drive them back. and the Elderlings forged the Out-Islanders with skill when they flew over their huts so frequently. Generations later, they came to raid our shores and forge our folk. So King Verity went to wake the Elderlings, and the Elderlings drove them back, and forged them in the process. I wonder if once more the hate will fester until... I sigh, and set my quill aside. I have written too much. Not all things need to be told. Not all things should be told. I take up the scroll and make my slow way to the hearth. My legs are cramped from sitting on them. It is a cold, damp day, and the fog off the ocean has found every old injury on my body and awakened it. The arrow wound is still worst. When cold tightens that scar, I feel its pull on every part of my body. I throw the vellum onto the coals. I have to step over Night Eyes to do it. His muzzle is graying now, and his bones do not like this weather any more than mine do. You are getting fat. All you do any more is lie by the hearth and bake your brains. Why don't you go hunting? He stretches and sighs. Go bother the boy instead of me. The fire needs more wood. But before I can call him, my boy comes into the room. He wrinkles his nose at the smell of burning vellum and gives me a scathing look. You should have just asked me to bring more wood. Do you know how much good vellum costs? I make no reply. And he just sighs and shakes his head over me. He goes out to replenish the wood supply. He is a gift from Starling. I have had him for 2 years now, and I am still not used to him. I do not believe I was ever a boy such as he is. I recall the day she brought him to me, and I have to smile. She had come, as she does, some twice or thrice a year, to visit me and chide me for my hermit ways. But that time she had brought the boy to me. He had sat outside on a skinny pony while she pounded on my door. When I opened to her, she had immediately turned and called to him, "Get down and come inside, it's warm in here." He had slid from the pony's bare back and then stood by him, shivering, as he stared at me. His black hair blew across his face. He clutched an old cloak of Starling's about his narrow shoulders. "I've brought you a boy," Starling announced, and grinned at me. I met her gaze incredulously. "Do you mean he is mine?" She shrugged at me. "If you'll have him. I thought he might do you good." She paused. "Actually, I thought you might do him good, with clothing and regular meals and such. I've cared for him as long as I can, but a minstrel's life..." She let her words trail off. "Then he is..." "Did you... did we..." I floundered my way through the words, denying my hope. "He is your son?" "Mine?" Her grin had widened at that, even as her eyes had softened in sympathy. She shook her head. "Mine? No. Yours? I suppose it's possible. Did you pass through Flounder Cove about 8 years ago? That's where I found him 6 months ago. He was eating rotten vegetables from a village midden heap. His mother is dead, and his eyes don't match, so her sister wouldn't have him. She says he's a demon-gotten bastard." She cocked her head at me and smiled as she added, "So I suppose he might be yours." She turned back to him again and raised her voice. "Come inside, I tell you, it's warm, and a real wolf lives with him. You'll like Night Eyes." Hap is a strange boy, one brown eye and one blue. His mother had not been merciful, and his early memories are not gentle ones. She had named him Mishap. Perhaps, to her, he was. I find I call him Boy as often as not. He does not seem to mind. I have taught him his letters and his numbers, and the growing and harvesting of herbs. He was 7 when she brought him to me. Now he is nearly 10. He is good with a bow. Night Eyes approves of him. He hunts well for the old wolf. When Starling comes, she brings me news.
I do not know that I always welcome it. Too many things have changed. Too much is strange. Lady Patience rules at Tradeford. Their hemp fields yield fully as much paper now as they do fine rope. The size of the gardens there have doubled. The structure that would have been the King's Circle is now a botanical garden of plants, gathered from every corner of the six duchies and beyond. Burridge and Molly and their children are well. They have Nettle, and Little Chivalry, and another one on the way. Molly tends her hives and candle shop, while Burridge has used stud fees from Ruddy and Ruddy's colt to begin to breed horses again. Starling knows these things, for it was she who tracked them down and saw to it that Ruddy and Sooty's colt were given over to him. Poor old Sooty was too old to survive the journey home from the mountains. Molly and Burridge both believe I am many years dead. Sometimes I believe that, too. I have never asked her where they live. I have never seen any of the children. In that, I am truly my father's son. Ketrickin bore a son, Prince Dutiful. Starling told me he has his father's colouring, but looks as if he will be a tall, slender man, like Ketrickin's brother Rurisk, perhaps. She thinks he is more serious than a boy should be, but all of his tutors are fond of him. His grandfather journeyed all the way from the Mountain Kingdom to see the lad who will some day rule both lands. He is well pleased with the child. I wondered what his other grandfather would have thought of all that had come to pass from his treaty-making. Chade no longer lives in the shadows, but is the honoured adviser to the Queen. According to Starling, he is a foppish old man who is entirely too fond of the company of young women. But she smiles as she says it, and Chade Falstar's reckoning will be the song she is remembered for when she is gone. I am sure he knows where I am, but he has never sought me out. It is as well. Sometimes when Starling comes, she brings me curious old scrolls, and seeds, and roots for strange herbs. At other times, she brings me fine paper and clear vellum. I do not need to ask the source. Occasionally I give her, in return, scrolls of my own writing, drawings of herbs, with their virtues and dangers, an account of my time in that ancient city, records of my journeys through Chalced and the lands beyond. She bears them dutifully away. Once, it was a map of the six duchies that she brought to me from him. It was carefully begun in Verity's hand and inks, but never completed. Sometimes I look at it and think of the places I could fill in upon it. But I have hung it as it is upon my wall. I do not think I will ever change it. As for the fool, he returned to Buckkeep Castle, briefly. Girl on a Dragon left him there, and he wept as she rose without him. He was immediately acclaimed as a hero and a great warrior. I am sure that is why he fled. He accepted neither title nor land from Regal. No one is quite sure where the fool went or what became of him after that. Starling believes he returned to his homeland. Perhaps. Perhaps somewhere there is a toy maker who makes puppets that are a delight and a marvel. I hope he wears an earring of silver and blue. The fingerprints he left on my wrist have faded to a dusky grey. I think I will always miss him. I was 6 years in finding my way back to Buck. One we spent in the mountains. One was spent with Black Rolf. Night Eyes and I learned much of our own kind in our seasons there, but discovered we like our own company best. Despite Holly's best effort, Ollie's girl looked at me and decided I would most definitely not do. My feelings were not injured in the least, and it provided an excuse to move on again. We have been north to the Near Islands, where the wolves are as white as the bears. We have been south to Chalced, and even beyond Bingtown. We have walked up the banks of the Rain River and ridden a raft back down. We have discovered that Nighteyes does not like travelling by ship, and I do not like lands that have no winters. We have walked beyond the edges of Verity's maps. I had thought I would never return to Buck again. But we did. The autumn winds brought us here one year, and we have not left since. The cottage we claimed as ours once belonged to a charcoal burner. It is not far from Forge, or rather where Forge used to be. The sea and the winters have devoured that land and drowned the evil memories of it. Some day, perhaps, men will come again to seek the rich iron ore, but not soon. When Starling comes, she chides me and tells me I am a young man yet. What, she demands of me, became of all my insistence that one day I would have a life of my own? I tell her I have found it. Here in my cottage, with my writing and my wolf and my boy. Sometimes when she beds with me and I lie awake afterward, listening to her slow breathing, I think I will rise on the morrow and find some new meaning to my life. But most mornings, when I awake, aching and stiff, I think I am not a young man at all. I am an old man, trapped in a young man's scarred body. The skill does not sleep easily in me. In summers especially, when I walk along the sea cliffs and look out over the water, I am tempted to reach forth as Verity once did. And sometimes I do. And I know, for a time, of the fisherwoman's catch, or the domestic worries of the mate of the passing merchant ship. The torment of it, as Verity once told me, is that no one ever reaches back. Once, when the skill hunger was on me to the point of madness, I even reached for Verity as dragon, imploring him to hear me and answer. He did not. Regal's coterie long ago disbanded, for lack of a skill master to teach them. Even on the nights when I skill out in despair as lonely as a wolf's howling, begging anyone, anyone to respond, I feel nothing, not even an echo. Then I sit by my window and look out through the mists past the tip of Antler Island. I grip my hands to keep them from trembling, and I refuse to plunge myself whole into the Skill River that is waiting, always waiting, to sweep me away. It would be so easy. Sometimes all that holds me back is the touch of a wolf's mind against mine. My boy has learned what that look means, and he measures the elf bark carefully to deaden me. Carry me, he adds, that I may sleep, and ginger to mask the elf bark's bitterness. Then he brings me paper and quill and ink, and leaves me to my writing. He knows that when morning comes he will find me, head on my desk, sleeping amidst my scattered papers. Nighteyes sprawled at my feet. We dream of carving our dragon. This concludes Assassin's Quest.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.